Hello and welcome back to Manga Kaiwa. Again, bit of a hiatus, but nonetheless, we have returned.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's sort of becoming like a whenever we can kind of situation.
Exactly.
And obviously, yeah. We do kind of try to keep it a bit consistent in regards to like recording on the same weekday when we actually do record, even though that in and of itself isn't always consistent. But, you know, hey, at least we're not stopping completely. And I'm proud of us for that. I feel like I said that last time, too. But yeah, so last time we made a discussion video, which I was really, really happy to do because it was definitely a topic that I really wanted to discuss, which was Inchun versus Musashi. But as per usual, today is our top 10. And Ben, would you like to, as per tradition, introduce the topic for us?
All right, yes. Yeah. So today we'll be doing a top 10 casts of characters from each series. So like, not necessarily like which series is the best overall, but which series has the best characters, basically, as a whole.
Yeah, and so this is going to be a bit of, I think, a confusing sort of premise for a recording, because in this case, you know, some series that probably had our top 10 single characters before might actually go down a list, and something that had, you know, maybe wasn't our favorite in terms of like individual characters that we really liked, would be much higher on this list than it would be on that previous list that we made. Like the top 10 protagonists obviously is part of the cast, and it definitely enriches the cast, but it isn't the entirety of the cast. So this is a bit more of an average kind of situation where we take like, damn, this series consistently had amazing characters. Like I cannot decide every one of these, like in the best of situations, you could be like, any one of these could be their own kind of story's protagonist, which I think is definitely the case for the ones higher on my list, which I will already preface, were not as high on previous character-based lists, which I'm really excited for because it's gonna be a bit refreshing now. Yes. All right. Yeah. I'm really excited for this. So, Ben, would you mind if I started with my number 10 spot?
Yes. Go ahead, Mr. Joester.
Okay. So I want to actually say one more prefacing thing. Sorry, I'm being annoying with this. But I think that our lists are actually going to be pretty different because in terms of cast, I feel like we just have different kind of like series that we talk about a lot in that regard. I'm really curious to see. I'm sure we're going to have some common series, but I don't think there are going to be too many actually. But in any case, I'm going to start off with my number 10 spot, which is Shaman King. So Shaman King, I did actually read the series rather recently, and to be entirely honest, I haven't finished it completely if you consider the Kodansha re-releases. So the original run was that 32 volume run. I'm on volume 34, so I technically still have two volumes to go in the new kind of complete release, but I doubt that any new characters are going to be introduced into the story as, you know, in those two last volumes, because we are in the climax already, or at least where I'm at. And that, I mean, yeah, like, I think I got my bases covered in terms of knowing what the cast is like in Shaman King, and it is great. Shaman King is a special series in the sense that it has a very kind of diverse cast of characters in how they approach different situations. Like, obviously, they all have their backstories, which are all quite good, actually, especially, for example, the main character, Yol, and his, as weird as it sounds, fiance Anna's backstory, in the whole arc that actually Take, the author, dedicated to explaining how they got to the place that their relationship is in today, which was a very touching arc called the Osorizan Revoir. I think it's in English, it's like the Fear Mountain, like au revoir or something like that. It has a really weird title, but it's one of the best arcs in manga, in my opinion. Like it's one of those arcs where I really don't need it to be like hype fighting the whole time, but it just is one of those examples of like Take using his really warm, really human character writing. A lot of people credit Demon Slayer, for example, with having this very kind of warm, kind-hearted approach to shonen storytelling that isn't really that common, which I can see. I personally think Shaman King does that much better, and it did it much earlier as well. All of these characters, they have a very human, weak kind of vulnerability to them, and it really is relatable. Obviously, they're all mostly kids, but even the adult characters, even characters like the main villain, Howl, who have lived for thousands of years technically, they also have these human sides of them that you wouldn't necessarily expect, but somehow Take is able to weave it in seamlessly. And I think there hasn't ever been a series for me that has made compassion between characters as believable as it is in Shaman King. Because in some series, you'll be like, oh, we just fought to the death, but now I'm going to be your friend. And it's just hard to kind of buy. But in Shaman King's case, it isn't. It's very, very authentic. And I think that kind of inter-character dynamic is what really projects this series in terms of like how good I think its cast is, definitely.
Yeah, all right. I mean, because I've seen / watched a bit of Shaman King myself. And even with my like limited, I guess, like, you know, scope of it, I still think the characters are really well done. So, yeah.
And the anime has progressed really freaking quickly. I think it's also because it's like a TV release. So it doesn't have like season-based. It's just a continual release on a weekly basis. So it's like really progressed. Because I don't know if you remember, but it started in April of 2021. So like a year ago. And it's already like halfway through. Like easy halfway through. Like they are already nearing the climax, which is kind of crazy. In the anime, I mean.
Yeah, how many episodes is it now?
I don't even know. I think it's like, I want to say like 70-something, I'm pretty sure. Something like that. I'm pretty sure. I'm not entirely sure, though.
All right. So, yeah, definitely another one for the list. But, anyhow, all right. So, my number 10 is Baki. So, Baki is just, you know, it's really one of those series that, you know, kind of like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, just kind of thrives on pure, like, ridiculousness and insanity. And its characters, you know, obviously bring that out. But I feel like, you know, ironically, Baki is, you know, called Baki. Baki is named for the main character. And, of course, he does get, you know, a good chunk of the focus. But honestly, I think the side characters of Baki as well are really fleshed out. I think that... of course, you know, seeing their individual, like, you know, fighting styles is really entertaining, like, and how they apply them. And just also they're like, you know, how they're written and, you know, like what their like interactions are. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, I think most of them like pretty much have the same like general like motivation, you know, it's like to be the strongest / you know, best fighter. But, like how they like, you know, go about like doing it, like, you know, how they like, I guess, like, you know, like their ways of like getting there is just like it's pretty interesting to see, because you know you just get like a diverse sense of like, you know, like I said, different fighting styles. Like, you know, you have like, for example, your brute strength fighters like Oliva and Jack is more MMA, but anyway, just and also their interactions. I feel like their interactions between characters are really fleshed out, and just seeing like the respect for each other they have is really
that's nice. Something like, I was about to say, because like you can have these two characters looking like they're about to like knock each other into next week like any second, and then like they're like, yes, respect, you are a true warrior. And it's like, it's sort of like Baki's one of those weird series where you don't really want to talk about it too seriously, at least in my case. I kind of feel weird talking about Baki in a serious tone.
Yeah,
because it's not a really about the narrative for me, at least. It's about just like, it's just about people fighting. Like everything is comes down to fighting in Baki. Like everything else is just like ridiculous Baki logic. Like no one really cares. Yeah, he can go kidnap the president of the United States. That's just how the plot advances. And then like, I feel like all those dynamics that you were talking about, all those like character interactions, they're like fighting. Like almost every character has a history of fighting with another character, especially with the length of Baki, especially in like the later arcs, which the anime is slowly but surely getting to. And like almost every character combination has had some kind of like combat-based interaction in the past. And it's like, you know, there's beef between these people. And then it's like, they don't talk. And when they talk, they say something completely like whack. And then they just slug it out. Like, you know, it's just, it's so like cool. And I mean, I was definitely considering putting Baki on this list because the cast is definitely one of the things that makes it a fantastic series. But there was one other similar series that I actually chose that inched it out, and I will talk about that one later. But then in the meantime, would you mind if I move on to my number 9 spot?
Yes.
Alrighty. So my number 9 spot is Ajin Demi-Human. So this is actually a series I've mentioned off and on because it is definitely a very good one. I mean, obviously, it is a series with its ups and downs. There are definitely its strong points and its weak points. But I tend to actually differ with other people in terms of what I think those weak points and strong points are specifically. Sorry, I have noise in the background. But essentially, I think, first of all, the protagonist is someone who I think a lot of the readers tend to dislike very much. I personally liked him a lot. I definitely thought that the way that he was very, very selfish, very, very unyieldingly egotistical, like not in a like in an arrogant way, but just in a way of like self-preservation, was definitely refreshing. It's not necessarily that I liked him. It's just I appreciated the narrative perspective that it gave me that was very unlike anything I'd read before. But then also all of these characters, and mind you, the series isn't like bombastically long either. It's 17 volumes long, which is a decent length, but it's not like that long. And it packs in a lot of very well fleshed out characters in that time span. Like some characters who are just hanging around for like the first 8 volumes. And like as the next volume, they're just like, wait, what? This person was that complicated? Because they get like some kind of very subtly woven in backstory. Like there is this this one character that I do remember very vividly, called Tanaka Koji, who's basically sort of this partner, this accomplice, one of the first kind of co-workers of the main antagonist, Sato, who's like this madman who just destroys everything. Obviously, Sato is like one of the most highly praised protagonists right now, so I'm not going to boil down his character to just that, but that's not the point. Sato, already being an amazing character, is a in a way someone who forms the character arc of, for example, this person I mentioned, Tanaka Koji. And Tanaka Koji's journey to sort of realizing that Sato isn't really fighting for them, the demi-humans, which is, I guess, a little bit of a spoiler, is really interesting because at first he really believes the power that Sato brings to their like kind of resistance, but then he realizes that Sato doesn't give a single flying, like, you know, he's just there to have fun and he doesn't care. And I think it's just really interesting to see how, you know, all these characters kind of push the other characters to develop in ways that you would never have expected beforehand. Yeah, and I mean, I would definitely recommend like just getting into the series whatever way you can. The CG version on Netflix isn't like the greatest, but I haven't heard like terrible things about it either. So that's an option if you're not willing to read the manga, but the manga is by far the best way of consuming it. It's also very, very nice artistically. So yeah, that's both for you, Ben, and also whoever might be listening.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely look into it. But I know. So, you know, you said you've mentioned the series on and off, and that just made me think how, I don't know. I feel like I'm just kind of like, I guess I feel a little guilty about this, but I feel like I'm kind of like regurgitating the same series over and over again in my list, but you know, it's okay because, I mean,
well, yeah, different aspects of those same series, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, but, like, I guess I just like don't have like, you know, like I haven't had, you know, the most time in my hands.
Yeah, yeah, know, no, no. I've definitely had like more free time on my hands in this last year, so I've like really, I guess, expanded on what I've read and consumed. So I mean, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I think it's impressive that you've been able to manage what you have anyway. So yeah, but yeah, I'm actually curious to hear what your next spot is, because I'm actually curious to hear what any of your spots are, because I'm kind of like, ooh, what's gonna come first, what's gonna come next, you know?
Yeah, all right, so without further ado, so my number 9 is Death Note. So I feel like Death Note is one of the series where, you know, one of those series where like it has, you know, it does have, you know, decently fleshed out, you know, side characters as well, but there's just this one dynamic that just like, you know, really overshadows everything, and that's Light, the protagonist, and L, and who is the, I guess, well, technically antagonist for at least the first half of the series. So so Light is interesting, like you said, he's kind of like similar to what you were saying. L is Light is, you know, he is the protagonist, but he is a very clear example of a villainous protagonist who, you know, you can I guess, you know, you can probably, you know, empathize. I guess you can kind of like see where he's coming from in his ideology of, you know, wanting to like cleanse the world of evil at first. But as the series goes on, and you know, like, I mean, you can even see these relatively soon as that, you know, light just becomes like extremely, you know, corrupt, you know, basically just like, you know, getting rid of people who stand in his way, whether or not they're like, you know, actually bad people or not. And with Light and L, you get this sense that I mean, I think the series itself says this, but essentially Light and L both see themselves as justice, as the ideal, you know, bringers of justice. And so like how they you know, like they're like sort of clashes, you know, even when they're even when they interact as partners and even friends, you know, you still shoot. I feel like you still sorry, I forgot where I was going with my train of thought. But really, no, just, like, speaking,
yeah. I think you were saying like even though they both think they're still justice, like they, you know, they still. I guess that, I think that's where you were in your train of thought. Yeah.
Yeah. But like seeing just like their, again, like their interactions and how Light is, you know, constantly, you know, scheming and, you know, having to like put on this facade, which at some point, you know, even, and, you know, he has to put on the facade of like pretending to not be Kira, which, you know, obviously he has to in order to like not get caught. But, and also, like, seeing, like, because, like, at some point, Light does lose his memories as part of his plans. And so, like, seeing how that impacts their relationship is really, it's really pleasing. Because, like, at first, you know, I think really throughout, like, their relationship, Al pretty clearly does suspect that Light is Kira. But when Light is, you know, loses his memories, you know, you know, he does, sorry, I guess I'm getting too specific here, but I'm just seeing their interactions and seeing their, like, clashes, you know, even, like, when they're standing right next to each other, it's just very pleasing, yeah.
Well, I get what you're saying, because, like, especially with the example you brought up of the memory loss, the self-induced memory loss, mind you, I think, yeah. Like, it's just impressive, because you can see how the writer basically manipulated the story and what can be done with a Death Note very like tactfully, but in order to like make it like make sense that their relationship could develop. Because if Kira was continually suspecting and being like paranoid about whatever kinds of I guess jumps L could get on him in if he was so close, then there wouldn't really be a lot of development in terms of their connection. And I think especially the betrayal, you know, quote unquote, spoilers here, of L at the end is what makes, of Light at the end is what makes, again, spoiler warning, L's death that much more kind of like, wow, that's cold-hearted, and I don't know if I endorse this guy's ideals anymore.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've seen their relationships develop, and that's it. You know, with the Light's, with L's death, that's the end. You know, it's not just the end of L's life, but the end of everything he brought with him, and you know, with that, of course, his relationship with Light. So yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, like beforehand, you know, you could already get the sense that, like, you know, okay, you know, Light is, you know, he's pretty corrupt, but like at that point, you know, I think you actively start to root against Light.
Yeah, you're like, wait, this guy is not, no, don't smile at him now, Yeah. Like that was like, oh, that like really just like, that was a slap to the face. I mean, even though you should have seen it, I should have seen it coming, honestly. Yeah. Death Note, definitely. I also want to like say, although Death Note didn't make it into my top 10, I can definitely appreciate that dynamic, but also just like, for example, like Inspector Yagami, for example, that he's an incredible character in my opinion, the way that he sticks up for his son. And eventually, although I haven't seen season 2, I'm aware that he, you know, he is part of that whole operation. And then, as much as season 2 and I guess the later parts of the manga really do get criticized, I think the successors of Light are definitely not completely without their like strong points as well. So I mean, I think while definitely that is a problem with Death Note, the two characters really do eclipse so many other things. In any other series, those side characters would be top tier, if you ask me.
Yeah, for sure.
So my number 8 spot is Blade of the Immortal. So again, a series that I've talked about quite a few times, but I mean, I've mostly talked about the two main characters and the antagonist. And while Manji, Rin, and Anotsu are obviously all very, very awesome characters. And for example, Kagemura Habaki is also, or Habaki Kagemura, sorry, that's the correct order. Trying to practice that. They're all incredible characters, and they are very central characters to the progression of this quite long story. It's 31 volumes, nonetheless. But I think what definitely strikes me, you know, beyond just those four, are the members of the Toryu, which is Anotsu's organization, which, although I would say, yes, they're the antagonists, and some points it's just impossible not to root for them because they get so much focus in the story. I would say probably as much as the main duo. And one of those members in particular, Magatsu Taito, I think is one of my favorites. Just because, you know, he's a cool character. He has that, you know, that suave kind of Spike Spiegel feel to him. I guess that's just the way to describe it these days. But he's also just kind of, very, I don't really know how to say it. He's just very kind of like attached in a respectful way to Manji. Whereas at the beginning of the story, they were kind of at their throats trying to kill each other. It's one of those kind of situations. But what I definitely think is, as generic as some of the side characters are, I stand by the fact that the original four, the two antagonists and a protagonist duo, are all very, very unique characters. I do agree that some of the side characters can be a bit bland in terms of how refreshing they are in the grand scheme of seinen storytelling. I definitely think that the way they work together is amazing. Unfortunately, I can't quite remember his name, but the original teacher of the main antagonist, Anotsu Kagehisa, is an amazing character as well. The way that he stands up for his fellow dojo members, but then also the way he rages when they attempt to keep him out of their affairs is all incredible. I definitely thought the way that they were able to weave in that kind of like very cinematic, dramatic samurai honor code, the Bushido, into the whole mix of the story was very, very inconspicuous. It wasn't obvious. It wasn't like cheesy. It made sense, and it added a lot of richness to some of the characters, mm-hmm. including Habaki Kagemura, the main antagonist, but then also obviously people like the teacher of Anotsu Kagehisa. I think it's just a very honest and also just very kind of believable way of portraying like that kind of classical Edo Japan kind of like very kind of like, you know, like kabuki play style of behavior that I guess is very kind of dramatized these days. It still retains that same drama, but somehow it's also able to feel human at the same time, which I think is really impressive from Samurai, the author.
Yeah. All right, so for my number 8 spot, I've chosen Dragon Ball. So Dragon Ball, I think, again, sort of like Death Note, I feel like, really in the DBZ portion of it, the cast of characters is really, is really elevated by Goku and Vegeta's rivalry, which I've talked about, a fair bit here, but I think the rest of the side characters, aside from, you know, being like, I guess, like pretty overshadowed at times by the Saiyans, I think they still deserve credit. I mean, I feel like, you know, if nothing else, I feel like the side characters, and you know, not to mention the various antagonists as well.
Yeah,
but I feel like they really bring out the world building aspect of Dragon Ball, which honestly, I feel doesn't always get the most credit. But anyway, I feel like you know, for example, like seeing like Goku's, you know, different mentors, and how like each one of them like sort of like expands the scope of the Dragon Ball world. Like, for example, you know, Kami, you know, literally God, like, you know, the guardian of the world, and his you know, in his relationship to Piccolo as one half of the same whole, essentially.
What I always find impressive about Dragon Ball, sorry to interrupt you, Ben, but is that there are very few series, and in fact, I can't really name any major ones that come to mind, that have explored a world on an interplanetary setting. Like, there are very few manga and any manga series that have done that. Like, outside of any manga, there's a lot, but inside of that kind of medium, there aren't a lot of series that have gone interplanetary, which I think is really... I'm not ashamed because we've gotten some amazing things, you know, besides that, but I think I would love to see more of it because Dragon Ball, definitely from what I've heard, like the different planets and their different characteristics and the different inhabitants of those planets are really intriguing. I was wondering if that's kind of something you feel too.
No, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, and I mean, obviously there are those characters that are always kind of criticized and made fun of, like, you know, Yamcha.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, Piccolo, I hear so many things that are good about him. And obviously, I want to limit how much I talk about Dragon Ball because you guys know the deal. I'm not going to say it again. But I definitely have heard enough about him, regardless of having watched the series or not. Yeah. So if you're kind of finished with your commentary on Dragon Ball, I can move on to the next series, which is actually the series that I was referencing before when Ben brought up Baki. So Baki and Kangen Ashura, my number 7 spot, are similar series. They definitely took inspiration from Baki was the inspiration for Kangen Ashura to a major extent, I would wager a lot on, because I mean, they even did a collaboration at some point. But Kangen Ashura, I think, really brings out a colorful cast of characters that do extend a bit beyond just the pure fist fighting. I think that since there are kind of two sides to the coin that is Kangen Ashura, it definitely allows for a much wider space and different kind of avenues besides just their combat, which I think Baki perfects, but obviously that is a little one-dimensional in some situations. For example, like I was referencing those two sides of the coin, one of those in Kangen Ashura is the business aspect, because essentially it's corporations deciding leaders of major kind of, trusts or like inter-corporation kind of relationships and deals through fights. So essentially there's this organization called the Kangen Association, which manages this. And Kangen Ashura's main portion focuses on the Kangen tournament, which basically decides the next leader of this whole association who will have a huge influence on world economics, because Japan is a large economic force. And essentially, that is, first of all, very, very interesting as a premise. Although it's not completely original, I think it was very well fleshed out. But then them basically using these fighters and the relationships between the company presidents and the fighters are very interesting. And every one of the fighters in the Kangen tournament, mind you, I haven't even gotten into Kangen Omega, the sequel series, which is already quite lengthy at this point, over 100 chapters. But even in Kangen Ashura, the first series, the original series, I was so impressed at how many, like, the fighters were all very, very interesting. Like, and some of them, like, they were literally insane. They had a screw, like many, many screws loose, like Setsuna, for example, and his obsession with the main character, Tokita Ooma. That was all incredible, like the way that they carried that through and how like the main character, I'm losing my train of thought, but Tokita Ooma had like these memory issues and how Setsuna was privy to some of the memories that basically he forgot because he was there when they were made in the first place, and how that all meshes together. That, for example, is amazing. But then every one of the fighters, like Mutemba, for example, and Sekibayashi Jun, all the ways that they have like these sort of background stories. Like Kengen has this thing where they like very concisely but efficiently does like these background, these like flashback past explanations for some of these characters. And it gets really freaking impressive sometimes. Although it gets wacky at some points, it definitely is very unique. Like I think the reason this series is so high on my list is because it's just like nothing I have ever read before or watched before. It's like these weird connections between fighters, but then also their managers or the CEOs of the companies the fighters represent. Like, that is all, like, you can't do that in any other series besides Kengan, which I very much appreciate.
Yeah, you know, I think actually a series that has, like, a similar aspect to that, like, you know, relationship between, you know, fighters and, like, corporations is one that I actually haven't included on my list, but it's Megalobox. So I think you can pretty much see this in the in really the, with the protagonist of the first season, Yuri, who is essentially a he basically fights for this tech company, like this major tech company, which I forgot the name of, but he has this, you know, I think pretty well developed relationship with the company president. And, you know, you kind of see this, like, sort of, like, inner conflict where, like, Yuri is kind of, like, you know, basically the corporations and the president's, like, dog. Whereas Joe, the protagonist, is, you know, he's, you know, even, like, explicitly called a stray dog. But, of course, you know, you obviously appreciate that more than being, like, I guess, another entity's dog. But you know, with that said, I feel like
he's his own dog.
His own dog, yeah, exactly. But yeah, with that said, I feel like that series also did that kind of aspect well, albeit, like, you know, to more, like, limited scope.
That's interesting. And again, another one that I have on my list that I intend to get to. Yeah.
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 All right. So yeah, we'll just check. Yeah, so, all right, so for my number 7 spot is Samurai Champloo. Samurai Champloo, of course, you know, being an anthology series, is primarily driven, I mean, you know, the cast really is driven by the three protagonists, Mugen, Jin, and Fu, who are, you know, don't get me wrong, are great in their own right, but I feel like, surprisingly, Samurai Champloo is able to, you know, even with the limited time they give them, it gives them the I guess villains they face nice fleshing out. I think the most well-developed villain in the series was Sara, who is basically this she's a blind woman who she actually travels with, like, the trio for a certain part of the journey to I forgot exactly, but I think just, like, so that they can accompany her on where she's going. And, but, you know, eventually, later on you see that she's a spy, like, that has kind of, like, infiltrated their, them, like, you know, serving, like, the shogunate. Basically, these, of course, Mugen and Jin have been causing, like, trouble, like, passing through, you know, the, I guess, the borders and whatnot. But anyway, and you see, like, her crazy, like, fighting Sally, like, I mean, she's really, like, the first, I think, villain in the series that Mugen and Jin just can't beat, basically. They're extremely, like, totally outclassed. And even when, like, Mugen, you know, is able to beat Sada, you can see that, like, she kind of lets it happen, you know.
Damn.
Which isn't, like, clear why, but you get the sense that, like, she's realized that, like, you know, I think, like, her motivation was, like, that, like, the shogunate, I think, would let her, like, be with her, like, lost son again, but she's realized that, like, you know, her son is just gone anyway, you know, is dead, and she realizes that, you know, all of this is pointless, so, like, you know, she lets herself just, you know, get beaten and, you know, die. And Mugen is just like, and you can see how extremely, like, frustrated, like, Mugen is by this, because he didn't win by his own skill. And just, like, seeing that rage is just such, like, a great payoff to, like, all of it, really. But
that's only one of the side antagonists,
and that's only one, exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not going to say it. It's just repetitive. I need to watch Samurai Champloo. I can't just keep saying it. I need to do it. Okay. So I guess I will move on, if you don't mind, Ben, to my number six spot, which is Shingeki no Kyojin. So Attack on Titan, a series that I actually recently read. So I haven't really experienced it too much in the anime, although my first anime ever, fun fact, was the first season of AOT. But I really did experience the bulk of it through the manga, which I read completely through. And I mean, I have to say, I was incredibly impressed with the cast of Attack on Titan. I mean, it was like, I think that's definitely its strong point. Like, I will say, as much as Attack on Titan is an ingeniously woven thematic story, I think a lot of those themes, first of all, are carried out through the characters. And obviously, yes, there is the rich history and world building that has gone into Attack on Titan in order to set up the main conflict towards the end of the story, which is also revealed to be basically the reason why there was the conflict in the first parts of the story in the first case. So it is kind of the main conflict of the story as a whole. I guess I'm kind of dancing around the bush right now. But what I'm trying to say is that even though there are strong points to the series that don't directly pertain to the characters, they are almost all the strong points of the series tie directly to characters, and if not indirectly, like they are somehow linked to the fact that the characters are very, very well done. Obviously, a lot of these names are very well known, and it's for a reason. The main trio, Eren, Mikasa, and Armin, and obviously a lot of the members of the Survey Corps, like Hanji, who was first a very kind of like gaggy character, or at least a very kind of like, not a gag character, but just a kind of a very one-sided, a one-dimensional character who was just kind of almost insane in this very disturbing setting. That was sort of her quirk. But slowly but surely, the character was developed into something completely different, something that was serious when it needed to be. And I think, for example, that character is a huge success in terms of Isayama showing how a character can develop under responsibility, added responsibility. Then there's obviously Levi, who, yes, as much as you can see him as just a butchering badass, is much more than that. Even through the subtle, very, very subtle backstory that we actually get via someone else's backstory, which is really interesting. I've never really seen it done before. We can really get a lot more insight into his character. And even, for example, just going off of that, his connection with Erwin, the commander of the Survey Corps, and how they gel is really interesting. But I think what makes it most interesting is when these characters fall out with each other. Because while a lot of these characters are on the same side, as many people will know in the latest, if you're following the anime or if you've completed the manga, many of these characters do not stay friends. And if they do, it's not for long until they break up again. And it's really heartbreaking, but it definitely reveals a lot of what these characters are. Like Armin, for example, when he is feeling completely left by his best friend, and how he develops into a much more, I think, just bold person as a result. I think it's all very, very interesting. And I think Attack on Titan's main, I think, strong point is its cast, and I will definitely stand by that, because when I think of the series, I don't even think of the massive titans and like the cool designs. I think of the characters, really, and that's saying something, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've already heard, like, you know, I mean, I haven't actually like really seen / watched AOT at all, but I've already heard so many, you know, good things about the cast and whatnot, and like, even like, I can, from my limited perspective, I can just see, like, you know, these are extremely fleshed out characters. So yeah,
definitely.
But yeah, all right, so moving on to my number six, I have JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So yeah, just JoJo is, I think, you know, another bizarre, another, like, you know, well, I mean, it's in the name, a series that thrives off bizarreness.
Another Baki type beat story.
Exactly, yeah. But I feel like, JoJo also is a very character-driven story, which, you know, makes sense, because, like, of course, JoJo isn't one singular story, but rather a collection of stories. And throughout that collection, you know, really, like, a huge cast of characters accumulates, And a lot of them consistently are done well, like in each part. I'm currently on part 6, so I've seen a bit of that. But I feel like everybody always points out, you know, the different Joe Bros of each part, like the, I guess, the main like allies of the JoJo protagonist. But and more often than not, they're just like really well done. I mean, even if they don't have like, you know, super complex, you know, motivations and like backstories and whatnot, I mean, they're still like just so like entertaining to watch. And you can see like, you know, each one of them has their own like distinct like, you know, personality and like feel to them. And that of course is really like brought up to like, you know, 100 with the introduction of the stand buildings.
Definitely. Yeah. But I think like also what interests me so much about JoJo's, which I'm going to talk about later on, is that every part kind of, I think, focuses on how they manage characters in a different way. Like obviously you can see the kind of, I guess, beginner's blunders. Novice blunders of Araki, not to say that I'm this expert that can point out a professional's errors in part 1 and 2, for example, where characters are a bit more, I guess a bit more one-dimensional, I would say, which is not a very uncommonly stated criticism of those first few parts. But especially in later parts, I think what's so interesting to me is that Araki really makes the differentiation between character progression and development, where as opposed to just revealing more about a character, he actually builds upon what they are and why they are. And I actually think, controversially, it took a while for Araki to get to that point. I mean, not to say JoJo's isn't enjoyable before like part 6, but I think it took that long in order for the character writing, even in part 5, you know, to get really, really kind of complex. And I stand by that. I really do like that. Obviously, there are some characters that are very well developed, as in like you learn more about them, like Kira in the earlier parts. But in terms of progression, it takes a bit. And when it is at that point, I think it's very, very, very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, JoJo's will be showing up on my list soon, but not so soon, because my next pick is Vagabond. So Vagabond, again, I'm going to try not to spoil too much for Ben, because we are at different points in the series. I have finished it, and there are so many characters that I just, oof. There are some characters who show up for one battle, and in that battle, Inoue is able to expand upon them so well. Not a lot, like, because that's, I guess it would be more like working hard and not smart, but Inoue is able to like give us just the right amount of information on this character and let the kind of implied storytelling do the rest. And it's just so beautiful. One particular example that comes to mind, obviously, there are the main players like Musashi, Kojiro, Matahachi, etc. But after that, there are like, for example, in the Kojiro arc, the antagonists of that arc, or the people who essentially get into a fight with Kojiro, and every single one of them has nuance. But, you know, among them, there are obviously those that are expanded upon a bit more, like Kon, for example. Oh my God, it was so beautiful, even though, you know, it's a very short period of time that we see these people. It's just, you can see how much of a genius Inoue is through how much he's able to make us respect these characters just in that short period of time. And very similarly to Blade of the Immortal, in fact, I think even more so, Inoue is able to master that old samurai code sort of, I guess, very formalized style of interaction that can really seem robotic and just not very human, and make it a completely human kind of thing. I think that's why it ranks so highly on this list. It's because it does things that other series just cannot, which is just make you really want to think and understand these characters. It doesn't give you what you need to understand about these characters in order to follow along with the story. It makes you want it, and you figure it out through the implied storytelling as a result. It basically makes you want to look, and thereby doesn't have to explain everything to you. That's how I would describe it the best. Because when, you know, Musashi is going on his philosophical existential crisis escapades, especially later on in the series, like where he's just thinking and he's just like, you know, lost. You don't get bored because you want to know what this guy is thinking, because he's that interesting. And you know, not to mention there are characters like Shishido Baiken, or I guess more specifically, no, I'm not going to say that because that's a spoiler, but you all know who Shishido Baiken is if you've read that far. But Shishido Baiken, for example, the one that we actually see, not the other one, I this is so awkward not spoiling it, but is an incredible villain, especially considering who he actually is and how that's revealed. And even, for example, the small characters that we don't ever see. Inoue does not let one character just be a throwaway. Somehow every character that we see talk, you can infer things about them. And I think that's just, that's one of the reasons Vagabond is one of the greatest series of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. I think, you know, of course, I mean, already, I feel like, I mean, from where I'm at, the character's already, you know, pretty developed and fleshed up. Like, just like, you know, of course, and bringing out what we talked about, you know, last week with, like, the Inshun fight, Musashi versus Inshun. Just like seeing how Inshun is developed as a character within that period of time is extremely pleasing. Of course, same thing for Musashi himself, obviously.
I mean, obviously Musashi sticks with us through the story, but Inshun,
yeah,
as fantastic a character as he is, it's not like he's part of the story, and I'm like, this is not spoiling things, he's not really part of the story too much beyond his own arc, but still, yeah, like, you know, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so moving on to my number five is Bleach. All right, so Bleach is just like, again, I feel Bleach, for a shonen, really does do world building well. I mean, it doesn't go like overboard with the world building, but I feel like what it does create, you know, introducing the different realms, of course, obviously Earth and like the realm of the living, and then like Hueco Mundo and, you know, Soul Society, it's really well done. And I feel like, seeing like the cast of characters within each realm is very pleasing. And of course, like, again, I mean, I feel like, Bleach just, I feel like Bleach characters just are to have their, they all feel like so distinct. I feel like, you know, just to give an example, like the, you know, the 13 captains of the,
Core God Squad,
the
13, yeah.
Yeah. Are just all like, I mean, they're not all like developed equally, but like, I mean, the designs, of course, are
yes,
so distinct, and of course, like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, with the time we spend with them, like, it's just like, you really see their own like quirks and like their own like what really drives each one, and like, it really is so satisfying to see, and of course, with the antagonists as well, just like, I mean, you have so many, like, I mean, you know, you have Grimmjow, you have Aizen, you have Okiura, and they're all just done amazingly without, you know, for lack of a better term.
Bleach praise.
You're Bleach.
We gotta give Bleach praise. We gotta, you know, whenever we bring up Bleach, oh yeah, Bleach is such a great series. But yeah. Yeah, I feel like, you know, what really hits me about Bleach is that Kubo, especially towards the end of the series, I feel like I keep saying that, but I mean, it's logical. If an author sticks with the series long enough, they'll get better at it usually. But especially towards the end of the series, I think Kubo's synthesis of character design and character, like just their content of character, is just incredible. Like, you know, I think the problem is that the character design doesn't necessarily reveal that much about the characters. In some cases, it really does. Like, for example, with Mayuri and his weird, eccentric like costumes, or Kyoraku and his like really laid back, kind of almost borderline inappropriate, just like laid back uniform. You know what I'm saying? Like, it does say things, but I don't think that's where the character design comes in so well to the cast. It's that literally the cast is colorful as a result of the amazing character designs. And it sort of almost sets a border between the characters, a visual border that we automatically as readers associate with what we know about their actual character. Like, even if they aren't directly connected, even if this part of the clothing doesn't directly symbolize this part of this person's backstory, no, even if that isn't the case, somehow still they're linked. And like somehow still like the fact that this character is so visually distinct allows you to appreciate their character or focus on their character a bit more when they're in like this crowd of amazing characters that are all just together. And I want to just make a little disclaimer, which is that I love Bleach and it very, very narrowly missed the list. I'm just going to make that clear. Very narrowly.
Understandable.
But like, I don't want to understate how much I love the characters in Bleach, especially as a whole, which is obviously what we're talking about today. Yeah. Okay. So if you don't mind, Ben, I'm going to move on to my number four, which is, you know, the one and only Big B, Berserk. So, I mean, Berserk, I would say, obviously, I usually have it in my top three in almost any list that it shows up in. But in this case, I'm not trying to understate it. Four is, I mean, it's above Vagabond. What can I say? It's amazing. But the issue is that I don't think Berserk's strengths are directly in its broad or like just rich cast. I think a cast, although it doesn't necessarily need to be a cast like One Piece's, which is literally hundreds of characters broad, for something to be considered a cast, I think it needs to be a bit broader than what Berserk offers. Although that isn't to say that what Berserk has, the family that Guts creates, especially towards the end of the story, isn't one of the best casts ever. And that's why it's so high on this list. The reason it isn't higher is, I guess what I'm trying to get at, is because I do feel like what really makes me appreciate something as a cast and not just an expose of amazing characters with their own dynamics is the vastness of it to a certain extent. Again, like obviously that's subjective, but that's the kind of the way that I evaluated. I feel like a cast is, if you're evaluating a series on the basis of their cast, I think the broader the cast, the more options you have for like just diversifying it and making more dynamics. It isn't to say that a broader cast is necessarily a better one. And I guess I should stop ranting about this soon, but it's just to say that I think most of the time when there are more characters, you're able to make the element of a cast stronger, not just the individual characters, if that makes sense. But that's why Berserk isn't in the top three, but it narrowly missed out, and that's for a reason. It's that high because characters like Farnese, characters like Shirka, you know, every one of these characters that progresses very, very well. Some of them are developed, like, you know, we learn a lot more about Serpico and Farnese's past, but even with characters that are too young to really have too much of a backstory behind them, develop and grow so well, like Shirka. I think I've expressed this on multiple occasions, but I love Shirka as a character. What a fantastic character. I mean, whenever I think of this character, I just think of, wow, this person and their connection to Guts. Like, I'm so happy for Guts and for Shirka that they have each other. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like these moments where, and this is what makes Berserk Berserk at the end of the day. It's like these people finding solace in each other when really they shouldn't have anything to rejoice about in this horrible, horrible world that they live in. But they still find it. And I think, you know, although as I stand by my point, it's not a very broad cast of characters, at least not when they're all together. I do feel like that family that Guts makes with, like, obviously I didn't mention Monkey Isidro, but he's also okay sometimes. like, you know, when they're all together, it's just, it's unbeatable. It's just so, it's such a heartwarming feeling, and it's for a reason, because you're basically in this very cold kind of just desolate setting. And I really appreciate that. And I definitely think it is a strength, not the greatest strength, but a very large strength of Berserk as a series. And I mean, not to mention the antagonist, I didn't even mention the griefies in this whole thing. But I mean, obviously, yeah, that is incredible as well. The Band of the Hawk is not even something I touched on. I guess I didn't because I'm more focusing on, I think, the more recent parts of the story because they just stick to mind more. But I mean, I can't understate how well developed every one of the members of the band is as well, or every one of the key members like Judo. Oh my God, Judo. Even Corpse, yeah, at the end of the day. Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, yeah. I mean,
I could go, like, go on.
I mean, Pippin too, like, you know, he's a man of few words, but like,
yeah, exactly. Just, like, so well, I feel like even Pippin, who's a man of few words, I think that scene where he carries off Guts is talked about a lot, and it's for a reason. it's because it does say a lot about who he is. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, not even mentioning freaking Rickert, my goat Gert.
The goats, yes. All right. So, well, what a coincidence, because Berserk is my number four as well.
What?
Yes. All right. So I guess I won't go like, you know, too deep into it because you just, you know, of course you just talked.
Sorry, about Ben, sorry.
Yeah. No, yeah, but I'm just, you know, I mean, Guts's party is just, you know, like you said, just like so well done, like, you know, how they're all like, you know, they're just like seeing them together, you know, just striving through this, you know, again, this terrible world they live in. And of course, like the individual members, of course, are really well done, you know. I mean, of course, Cedro is just, you know, he's just a monk boy, but, you know, alas.
He's just a monk boy.
Yeah. Yeah. And how they're all like connected to Guts and like, you know, they're, you know, how, and now like Guts like intertwines them is really cool to see.
And I mean, just props to Miura. I guess I don't know if I'm kind of stealing your thunder here, Ben, but like even characters at the end where you don't really know that much about him, but you know that somehow you just feel it because of the subtle ways that Miura makes the facial expressions and all. Like Skull Knight's connection with whatever is on Elfheim is just like, you know, something's coming.
Yeah.
Like in that backstory, obviously, that flashback, that Guts.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
The biggest
reveal of course,
Berserk, I would say, in terms of just lore. But then even like, I'm struggling to remember the deity's name in Elfheim, the elf queen. But even her and the way that she, like, you know, interacts with Casca, you know, when she's attempting to help her, you know, get her memories back, that's all just incredible. It's magical too. I guess I'm mentioning that character in particular, it's because even towards the end, like there's constantly something new you appreciate or can appreciate about a character in Berserk.
I mean, I know you touched on the antagonist as well, but of course, you know, Griffith is great too. But shout out to my boy Zod, you know, just awesome dude.
Zod. I mean, yes, Zod is a fighting beast. He loves fighting, and he's bored, and that's kind of who he is. But the fact that he has these very unique character interactions with so many of them, like the characters in the story. Like, it's that implicit storytelling again that Miura is such a master of. It's like, you know, something's up without having to be told that something's up between these characters. Like, Zod wants to fight Skull Knight, like, very, very badly. Yeah. You know he does. For some weird reason, Zod throws Guts his sword at Daldry. Like, and in Daldry. Like, you know, I think it was in Daldry, but it was sometime. I don't know. But that in and of itself, you're like, wait, what? Like, you know, it's sort of like this weird kind of like, and then Zod submits to Griffith. And it's like, you know that even these characters that you could maybe mistake as one-sided or just not as complicated as they actually are, you don't even need to be told that they are. You sort of just feel it at some point. And it's just, oof, it's beautiful.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
All right, well, I guess I will move on to my number three, if that's okay. Which, not really, but it's JoJo's, which I did mention was coming up on my list later on. And so the particular part that I would like to focus on, or the particular parts, are Steel Ball Run and JoJolion. Actually, this might even be a hot take for some people, but I think that JoJolion has an even better cast than SBR, because Steel Ball Run is an amazing story, but I think that if I'm thinking about JoJolion and what its strength is, like what its real strength is, it lies in its cast of characters. The Joestar family in the alternate universe is incredible, the way that they all interact and the way that the tragedy of their family history affects them and how they go about and what their priorities are. Like the way that they decide how to go about things. Almost all of the Joestar children are very interesting, maybe at the exception of someone like Joshu, although even him, like you know some stuff about him that is not just one-sided either. He is also nuanced in some regards, even though he's a pitiful kind of coward that, I mean, no. But still, he you can appreciate the attention that's gone into him. And I think this is where what I mentioned earlier really comes into play, is that these characters develop so nicely, because they're just more than anything you could have ever expected at the beginning of the story. I haven't even talked about SBR, where Johnny's progression is just amazing, and his connection with Gyro, but how Valentine and the pressure that he applies and the determination that he has rivals Johnny's and acts as a catalyst towards Johnny's relationship with Gyro. It's beautiful. It's like a chain reaction. And I think that's what really is magical about a cast, is when a change that one character undergoes as a result of the actions of another character has a ripple effect and basically affects the whole story, yes, but as a result, the characters themselves, which I think, woof, it's amazing, especially in JoJo's, especially considering the structure of JoJo parts, which are like, you know, the beginning, the introduction, and, you know, eventually mounting towards that climax with the antagonist, which, you know, that's exactly what it does, just like in practically every other part. But it's just more complicated. It's like Araki has taken what he used to do and just multiplied the amount of richness and character tenfold. And I really, really cannot understate how I appreciate that. Like, I haven't even mentioned characters like Jobin or Norisuke. It's just, you could go on, especially with JoJo's. It's a very broad cast as well, which is, you know, something to mention. I will say, though, I mean, you know, I this is more of like a joke kind of comment. I mean, obviously Toru isn't as one-sided as people kind of talk, you know, make him out to be, but he definitely is a bit lacking as a villain. He's just funny, you know, he just wants his plants. For those of you who understood that, you know what I mean.
Wait, who does?
The main antagonist of part 8, just like, oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just saying, like, you know, he's not the best antagonist, but He's still JoJo's, you know, he's still a JoJo character. If you know what I'm saying, Ben, like, you know, he's still a JoJo.
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah. All right. So without further ado, so my number three is Hunter x Hunter. So, yeah, I mean, Hunter x Hunter is, I think it really is a series with a broadcast, and and I think a good majority of the characters that do, you know, that we do spend time with are fleshed out very well. You know, right off the bat, you know, like when we meet, you know, the I guess the core, like, you know, the core four, you know,
the core four, yes.
Yeah, Gon, Killua, Leorio, and Kurapika. You know, just seeing, like, you know, what drives each one, you know, we don't know everything about them from the onset, obviously, but, like, just seeing, like, their interactions, like, and, like, seeing what drives each one, like, in their, it's just very entertaining right from the get-go. And, of course, like, and, of course, right from the first arc, we get, you know, one of the best antagonists in the series in the form of, well, I guess I'm not sure if you could call him an antagonist, but, you know, he is one of the main rivals of the series, and Hisoka. He's just...
I thought you were going to say Tompa the Rookie Crusher.
Oh, no, yeah, well, I am...
Can't forget him.
Can't forget him. Yeah, I mean, Hisoka is just, like, you know, he's, like, just, he's just this creepy, like, completely battle-obsessed dude to the point where, like, you know, it's, like, a turn-on for him. Like,
just, yeah,
like,
he's a psychopath. You know, he's just a psychopath. Yeah. That's all that has to be said about him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's this weird dichotomy, because, like, when you see him, like, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, you do get kind of uncomfortable, like, for a lot of the time, like, it just, like, it's, like, but at the same time, you like seeing him. He's just enjoyable to watch it. It's just, like, weird, like,
don't expose us, Ben. Don't expose us.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, and of course moving on, you have, like, the Phantom Troop, which is, you know, just, like, this collection of antagonists, this organization, and just, and, like, sort of, like, you know, I guess, like, with the another group, the Espadas and Bleach, each member is, like, I feel like really fleshed out well. I mean, even if, like,
besides Kotopi, everybody, yeah, excluding Kotopi, I mean, is well fleshed out.
Yeah. I mean, they don't all get the same amount of development, but, of course, like, each character's design is really, like, unique and distinct. And the ones that do, that are developed, are just, like, are really well done. With, of course, you know, the leader, Krogo, and Lovett. drives Sam, like his weird like sense of beauty, I guess, what he values in life is just like, they do even address his motivations are like pretty cryptic, but, like from what you're able to make out, like it's just like he's just like this universe within himself, you know.
Yeah, and, I think he's just very charismatic. And I think Krollo is a hot topic among the community, but he's definitely someone worth exploring because there's so little directly stated about him. But I think there's actually a lot more than you might expect to learn about him if you look closer. Yeah, but that's, I can't believe I freaking I knew I was forgetting something. I have to admit my flaws now. I did not include Hunter x Hunter in my list, but I mean, man. I almost feel like saying it would probably inch out Shaman King, as it would probably even like inch out the top, I think seven. I would say it probably would take number seven spot if I were to redo my list. Fine, this is my top 11 cast. I've committed a crime. But in any case, I can't believe I forgot that. But I would like to move on to my number two now, if that's all right with you, Ben, which is a kind of series that I think I have to draw a lot of Hunter x Hunter comparisons to. And I'm pretty sure there was some pretty obvious inspiration taken from Hunter x Hunter. This is actually not a manga, it's a manhwa, which is one of the best stories I've ever read, no doubt. It's Tower of God. Tower of God is unbelievable. And no doubt, there's obviously the world, which, you know, it cannot be understated. It is probably among the top three most, the most amazing worlds I have ever experienced. You know, all the floors and the different characteristics and the history that they have, especially in regards to like the mysteries of the tower and why the powers balance is the way that it is today, with Jihad and his, the 12 great families, like all of that, and how every floor has a connection to them is obviously amazing. But as a result, because of these cataclysmic forces, these very powerful beings, people like, just people who reside on every different floor have a different kind of history molded by the events of history. And I think it's especially interesting to see how they just decide to come together, regardless of how important they are or how important they are just according to the government. I guess you could say it's more like a kingdom, but it's so impressive the way that it just feels so real. But I think what really makes me appreciate it is the way that you can, you know, very much like Hunter x Hunter, it doesn't treat you like an idiot. It really is the best example, in my opinion, of even though, some of these characters can have really childish, weird designs, like more just like, you know, you can't really take them seriously from a visual standpoint. It's just like their actions are, they speak so loud as to who they are and why they do what they do. And I mean, wow. I think it's especially impressive to note that SIU, the author, just introduces these like just casually on a weekly basis in these very lengthy weekly basis chapters, mind you. I am so worried about this man's health, or this person's health. But I mean, I'm getting some amazing characters. And I feel like, you know, just even beyond the main cast, and this is where, you know, a series has gone above and beyond what it means to have a good cast and gone to like, you know, transcendent, biblically accurate angel type beat. and I feel like, you know, the main cast is amazing and the main cast is vast too. There's not just Bam, Kun, and Nak, the main three. There's Endorsi Jihad. There are all the other princesses of Jihad that we're aware of. There's so many different characters that I cannot emphasize enough are so impressive and so authentic. But there are also just characters that we meet very briefly that we know very little about. For example, even someone like Hackney, for example. Hackney, the fisherman that we met on the 44th floor, on the floor of death. You know, it's just we haven't been with him that long, but we know so much about who he is, and he feels so complete as a character without like feeling as if we can't learn more about him. He feels complete, but not at the end of his potential. And I think that's what's so amazing about Tower of God, is that you are always satisfied, but you know there's more to come, which is just an overjoyous feeling. Like, I don't even know if that's a word, but like the feeling that you get is just so overjoying when you realize, damn, this is already good, but it's going to continue to get better. And I mean, yeah, Tower of God was an amazing experience, and definitely the characters were the highlight of that.
Yeah, all right. So yeah, because, like, I mean, now we're really getting into, like, the, I mean, you know, of course, obviously, the series we talked about, you know, before this, will have, you know, great cast in their own right, but I feel like we're really getting into, like, the character-driven series. So, yeah, all right. So, my number two is Cowboy Bebop. So, yeah, so, you know, kind of with Samurai Champloo, you know, it's a short series, so, like, you know, the cast isn't, like, super broad, but I feel like, you know, the cast we do get is just, is very well done. You know, I mean, starting with, you know, of course, the crew of the Bebop, you know, we spend, like, a good amount of time with, we know, with each character, like, you know, getting to know them and getting to know, you know, for a few of them, like, you know, Faye, their, like, backstories, and, just, like,
hey, Faye.
And,
like,
Faye, yes, and, of course, Ed. You know, who can forget him? Like, and yeah, and like the arcs, like, each have, like, you know, for example, like the arcs that focus around each one, I feel like are really well done. Like, for example, you know, with Radical Edward, he was a member of the crew. He was kind of like the techie aspect of it, but yeah, just seeing, like, you know,
bro. Oh my god,
what?
She's such an enigma, I swear.
He is, yeah. But yeah. But, like, yeah, I mean, and that's another thing, like, because, like, you know, even with, like, you know, with the how the characters are developed, you know, there still is like an air of mystery to them. I feel like that's what makes them so appealing in a way. Like, this air of mystery, this feeling that leaves you wanting more, you know. It's just like, I feel like it's so well done. And of course, you know, the antagonists as well, like, you know, they all have their, you know, again, like with Samurai Champloo, you know, you get, like, this slew of protagonists with, you know, within each of the I guess the anthological arcs, but I mean, they're all, like, so well done, you know. Even if, you know, they're not always necessarily fleshed out, they just have, like, seeing, like, their own, like, quirks in action, like, how, like, and how, like, the crew, like, deals with them, you know. Of course, like, you know, obviously the Vicious, but also Mad Pierrot. Just, it's like this insane, like, man child who looks like, you know, basically the Penguin, like, you know, from
Man Child, bro.
Yeah, just, yeah, like, oh my god, yeah, just like,
well, I think that's what I think Watanabe is so good at, from my experience at least, is that it's just like he knows this series isn't going to go on for very long, but at the same time, it's like, enjoy it while you can, like, you know. And it's just like, yeah, that's what it is. That's the feeling, that's the vibe, and it's amazing. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right.
And so now I guess I get to the numero uno, the big podium man. So I won't go into too much detail with this, because I think that it's a very difficult series for me to talk about in terms of the cast, because it's just, I feel like almost it shouldn't be where it is. It shouldn't be as good as it is, because it just isn't long enough. But especially in relation to a lot of these other series, but I just can't resist it. Jujutsu Kaisen is at my number one. I mean, it's just the characters in the story and their interactions. Again, it carries on the same kind of wittiness and the same kind of, I'm not going to treat you like an idiot readers that Hunter x Hunter and Tower of God have. But I mean, my God, you know, it's not just the protagonists, it's the villains too. The villains and their unity as a villainous organization also feels incredible in this story, because a lot of these curses, although they're not human, they have very human sides of them. And it is definitely thrown into question whether they are the true humans or not, because they are an expression of human emotion. Fear, which is arguably one of the most common emotions that humans feel. And that makes even the villainous organizations one that you can almost empathize with in some situations, even though they do these terrible things. And I think that's another pinpoint when you know, wow, this author is amazing. When you question your own feelings towards a character and why you have those feelings, you're like, huh, I don't feel like I should be feeling this way. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of sus there. Like, you know, like when, for example, I actually felt for Jogo, spoilers, when he was getting slugged by Sukuna in the Shibuya incident arc. Like, it's just like these subtle moments that make you know, yes, these are going to be built on in the future. I feel like I'm repeating a lot of praise from previous parts, but really, Jujutsu Kaisen, I think, brings to a peak every aspect that I've touched on in previous casts that I've commented on. But not only are they so likable, but especially considering this is a shonen series, they are very morally gray. And I'm not trying to, you know, be that one guy that says morally gray characters are automatically good characters. I'm trying to say that it makes them feel a lot more authentic in this case, which it does often, but it's only if it's used well. And in Jujutsu Kaisen, that is definitely the case. Characters like Yuji, Megumi, they're not out for justice. They're out for themselves mostly and their own friends and loved ones. And while that isn't very unique, the way that I think it's done in a very kind of just like blunt way, like we're not going to put any icing around this. That's very Hunter Hunter, Tower of God, like, I'm going to take you seriously. You are the reader. I don't need to treat you like an idiot, kind of. And I really appreciate that, especially when it comes to characters. But I guess what I think Jujutsu Kaisen has that a lot of these series don't, which is, I guess, what I mentioned before, is that it really brings everything together in this perfect blend. Not only are the characters complex, they're likable. And you can even empathize with them in situations where you hated them before. It's a very, very impressive feat, especially considering that the series is very short compared to a lot of the ones that I've touched on in the list so far. And I just am so impressed, and I just can't imagine what's going to develop in the future with all of these characters and how they interact with each other as well. I haven't even touched on some of these characters that everybody raves about, and for good reason. People like freaking Suguru Geto and Gojo and their dynamic and all that, like, you know, it just, oof, it goes on and on.
Yeah. All right. As I know, Jujutsu Kaisen is, you know, one of the crazes these days among the anime community. And, I know I'll have to check it out eventually, but,
you won't regret it. Believe me, you won't.
Yeah, I know. But, All right. So, without further ado, my number one choice is Gintama. So, yeah. All right. So for me, Gintama really is the quintessential character-driven anime-manga. I think, like, you know, the plot certainly does have its high points as well, but the strength of Gintama as a series really does lie with its characters. You know, for good reason, I feel like during, like, the first, like, good, like, I guess, like, I don't know, I want to say, like, maybe 50 episodes, which does sound like a lot, but it is. But you spend a lot of that time, like, just, like, Gintama spends a lot of that time, like, establishing, you know, the cast of characters and, like, the broadness of that cast. And, of course, I mean, you meet more people later on. But I feel like what Gintama does well is, I guess this is sort of similar to JoJo Part 4 in the sense that, you know, you kind of stay in the same place with these characters. You know, for Gintama, it's Kabukicho within the city of Edo, which is what Tokyo was called at that point in history. It takes place during the Edo period, which is like a futuristic, like sci-fi-esque version of the Edo period, which is in and of itself is a very cool premise. But how these characters develop, like their interactions with each other, like, you know, and like, you know, and like seeing how, you know, like these, you know, because I mean, Gintama is, you know, really primarily, it is a comedy series, but like it does have its, you know, obviously serious moments and arcs as well. And I feel like, you know, watching these goofballs, you know, like when it goes down, when things get serious, like how they, like, you know, how they like move about like the serious moments, I feel like it's so rewarding because you've spent that time with these characters. You spent that time, you know, getting to know them, getting to know like their relationships with each other. Like, you know,
that's
I'm sure like, you know, somebody could say, oh yeah, you can just skip the comedy arcs in Gizma. You can just watch the serious arcs. I mean, okay, you can do that. But if you do that, the payoff, you'll miss the payoff really of those arcs. So
because yeah. You're getting attached to these characters basically in the meantime. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damn. I mean, oof, I could just go on. I have to stop myself already because, I mean, I'm probably going to just go way over time. Not that we have a time limit, but we have a day time limit, that's for sure. yeah, and I mean, I really appreciate your time for this, Ben, because, I mean, this is a huge part of just, like, you know, I guess my enjoyment of any manga as a medium, and I'm sure you share that sentiment. So, and thank you to everyone who was listening as well. We did rant a lot, but... you know, that's what we do on this whole
season. Yeah.
So yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will get the episode out that's coming up next whenever we can. And
yeah,
really appreciate the patience of those who've come back to listen after listening to the last episodes. We appreciate it that you're actually, you know, being consistent with that. Thank you. This is really just a passion project, and I mean, we really appreciate it when people are able to hear our voices and our opinions on the things we love. So we will see you next time.
Yes. Keep struggling. Mata yo ga akereba o